It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we continue our exit interview series with Tyler Johnson.
We'll review Tyler's season and answer some key questions about his future. And yes, we'll talk about that contract. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided, and you can follow me in my writing on Twitter at TRomillo13.
On today's show, we are continuing our exit interviews. They're going to follow the same general format. We'll talk about one player per show, review his season with some pros and cons, and then answer some key questions about his future. If you want to hear the first show about Goran Dragic, you can find that in our feed. But let's start today's show with some pros and cons about Tyler Johnson's season. David, my pros are that he stepped up in a starting role that he wasn't necessarily expecting to have because of Deion Waiters' injury, and held up defensively. I want to talk about that because... we're going to talk about our cons a bit later on, but there's a bad taste in people's mouth after that, after he basically disappeared in that series against the Sixers in the playoffs. But I was looking at his defensive metrics, the fact that he basically for the first 3 years of his career defended mostly other backup guards. And after being forced into a starting role this year, became one of the more consistent perimeter defenders, I thought, for Eric Spoelstra. Spo routinely would go to Tyler Johnson in defense situations at the end of games. I thought he did really, really well on that end of the floor.
Huh. I wish I could see it as such a positive as you did, because I know there were moments there, and part of the thing I think we tend to think of when we associate Tyler is just grit. I mean, I know that's kind of an overused cliche, but at the same time, I really do feel like he fights his way past injury and tries to compensate for his relative lack of athleticism and size. So, you know, you kind of appreciate his effort there defensively, but I'm not necessarily sure that he's been a good defensive perimeter. I mean, you mentioned the statistics. Those can be kind of taken out of context. Was there something that really stood out as why you think he was a solid defensive player on the perimeter?
Well, he had a ESPN's defensive real plus minus of minus 0.43, which is basically even. Okay. Which is good for a guard, like because that ESPN's real plus minus factors in things like height and just general scoring, and guards tend to score more scoring against, and so that's pretty good. And then his defensive box plus minus on Basketball Reference was similar, it was basically even. And he's always been a good defender, like his DBPM on Basketball Reference for his career has been. It was positive at 0.7 as a rookie, and then it was dead even at 0.0 as a sophomore. Last year at 0.8, and then two seasons ago at 0.8, and this past year at negative 0.1. So you factor in him going against starting caliber guards on a nightly basis, and that drop off looks significant. But again, these metrics tend to factor in things like scoring against and you know it. I know ESPN's, for example, will take in defensive rebounding, which is not necessarily a shooting guard's job, right?
You're right.
So I thought that those metrics were favorable for him, and that the eye test in general, like, yeah, he's got some deficiencies. He's not the biggest guy. He's not necessarily somebody you want switching against bigger guys, but the Heat don't switch, so that's fine. So in their system, I thought he did really well, and you know, you could have expected a guy that looks like Tyler Johnson to not do that well as a starting shooting guard defensively. You could look at him as a liability. And the fact was, he wasn't a liability. I mean, other teams were not able to attack him in pick and rolls and things like that on a consistent basis. Like, just that alone, I thought, was a pro for Tyler Johnson.
I just tend to question how much... Like, neither of us believe that he has a higher ceiling at this point, that he has probably maximized what he can do.
Right.
At this point, if there's any growth from him on this roster, it'll be about finding a way to maximize his skill set. And I'm trying to think, and I can't, and I really haven't been able to all season, maybe for most of his career. what is it that he does particularly well? Like,
well, you're jumping the gun here, David, because that's our whole second segment. That's what you do. And so, but we're trying to focus on the positives here. And
I'm
grasping at straws by looking at his defensive box plus minus on Basketball Reference's advanced stats site. Okay, right. Like, just
Okay, so here,
if I'm
forced to, because of the context of this show, look at the positives of Tyler Johnson. Yes, he's a solid defender, and you've got to appreciate how much he works. Like, I really do love that about players, you know, that are willing to play through injury and to always try their hardest. There's never been any questions about Tyler's, willpower or his perseverance. You know, unlike a player, say Hassan Whiteside, I don't think anybody's ever doubted whether or not Tyler wants to play at his best or play his hardest. He hasn't been able to. So, but let's not focus on that just yet. As far as his positives are concerned, he did step into the starting role. That was pretty good. I think he took more shots from the perimeter, even though those shots weren't falling at nearly the same level as they have been previously. But at the same time, he's showing that he's capable of handling that perimeter-based offense. I still think that for him, we'd like him to be a little bit more aggressive, right? And we started to see signs of that when Dwayne Wade returned to the team in February, that he kind of preached for Tyler to be more and more aggressive. And I think we started to see a few games string together where that more aggressive side of Tyler came through. And that's the kind of side, I think, where he's most effective. Like, it's great to be able to mix up that three-point shooting there. But I think at heart, Tyler is still a guy who can use that size and explosion to get past a defender and finish surprisingly well at the rim.
You mentioned his three-point shooting. I mean, he was one of Miami's better three. Like, his three-point percentage dropped a little bit, but he was still, I think, one of the top three or four three-point shooters for the Heat this year. And when, you know, they ran a lot of similar plays for Tyler Johnson as they did for Wayne Ellington. He's not Wayne Ellington in a catch-and-shoot, like, quick-release way. But he was kind of like the closest thing they had to him when Ellington wasn't in the game. So I thought that was a positive. As far as cons, we've already kind of covered it. His scoring numbers dropped off. And he was a non-factor in the playoffs. And I think that, you know, in the spirit of having an exit interview, if we were sitting down with Tyler Johnson right now and saying, like, look, you know, we appreciated you stepping into a starting role this year. You held your own defensively. You know, given that our offense required – you know, people to shoot threes and you know, increase the spacing that we had on the floor, you disappeared in our playoff series when we really, really needed you. And that would have to be brought up. And I think that, again, is just like that being the last thing we sort of saw of Tyler Johnson just doesn't feel good, you know, going into the summer. And it's, you know, I'd have to go back and rewatch it, but generally I just think he had a problem with the Sixers' size, with their level of aggression, and quite frankly just wasn't, like you said, was not aggressive enough. And there are ways to, you know, use another team's size against them. We're seeing Boston, we're seeing a guy like Terry Rozier do it right now in the second round of the playoffs. So I think that's something that has to be talked about with Tyler Johnson.
Now, you could say that maybe Philadelphia was conceivably the worst possible matchup for a guy like Tyler. Like, having a guy like JJ Redick go in there and constantly crumbing off screens and cutting all over the court was not something that played to Tyler's strengths as far as a defender is concerned. So maybe maybe Redick was able to exploit that matchup, and that's what, you know, has left a particularly bad taste in our mouths as far as Tyler's overall performance there. But he was also hurt, and you know, he wasn't necessarily a factor offensively, but then he was just totally taken out of it. Like, if they had matched up against Boston, had they lost that last game of the regular season versus Toronto, who would he have faced? Marcus Smart as their starting two guard? I mean, that would have been a much more favorable matchup for Tyler, because Tyler is a guy you can play off ball. I mean, Marcus Smart is a guy you can play off of. You know, you don't necessarily have to defend him closely because he's going to take three-point shots, but he's not really much of a scorer. He could be a guy who could help limit Terry Rozier a little bit perhaps, you know.
You mentioned that hand injury, and that's a good point to bring up, because what was that game? That was the first game in Miami, game three? Yeah.
No, I think it was
game four. One. Game one where he hurt the hand?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember. But there was a point where he started the game like making his first 2 3-pointers, right? And then hurt his hand.
Yeah.
And I think that really that played a huge factor in his playoff performance. Like, imagine, I'd want to know what his series would have looked like had he not hurt his hand, because I pointed out a number of times before, every time the ball was dead, he was messing with the bandage on his hand. Like, it was clearly, like, bothering him. There was no way of getting around it. You talked about his development a little bit, David, and we're going to talk about that next. In particular, have we reached the end of Tyler Johnson's development? We'll talk about that after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, we'll talk about what the Heat can do about Tyler Johnson's contract later on. But let's start here, David. It's not a secret that so far Tyler hasn't lived up to what his cap number will be this coming year. Do you think he can, or do you think he's plateaued?
Well, like I said in the first segment, I think he really has plateaued, at least as part of this roster. He's just not a guy who can take up much more of a scoring load. You know, we've talked about his defensive limitations as well. He's a fine player, a guy who at best could be a good sixth man of the year candidate. You know, if he comes off the bench for a sufficient amount of playing time, but that's not necessarily what you're paying somebody $19 million a year for. That's just a lot of money for somebody who doesn't have much of an impact. So to me, I would argue that he has absolutely plateaued, and that I don't know that there's any room for him to be, quote-unquote, worth that level of money.
Yeah, I think as far as the contract goes, I'm assuming that Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg, along with basically the rest of the NBA, sort of figured that the cap spike would continue.
Absolutely.
And that $19 million figure wouldn't look nearly as bad as it does going into this summer. Given that, I don't think he was ever going to be worth $19 million. I don't care what the salary cap was. I don't. It's just, that's a lot of money to give to a guy who is probably best coming off the bench. Like, we talked about how stepping into a starting role was a pro for him this last season, but if we're going to get the best version of Tyler Johnson, we've seen that the best version of Tyler Johnson is coming off the bench and taking advantage of second units where he can be a little bit more aggressive. He talked about going into this season, he talked about wanting to be more consistent, right? Like, yeah, he can come out and have an 18-20 point game here and there. He wanted to come out and do that more often, be more consistent as a scoring threat. But we're really, that consistency is what we're talking about when we talk about all-stars. Like, with the superstars of this league, I mean, you look at what LeBron James is doing, and the first thing people are talking about with LeBron is how consistent he's been. And that's just, any player can come out and score. Like, hell, Corey Brewer put up 50 points in a game once. Like, he's not capable of that, but he did it once. Like, guys can come out and have big games, and Tyler Johnson wants to have that consistency, and a guy that gets paid $19 million ought to have that sort of consistency. But he's been trying to find that, and I just don't know that he can. Again, unless he comes off the bench, and then do you want to pay $19 million to the sixth man of the year? Like, even if he won sixth man of the year, $19 million is a lot to spend on that player, and I really do think that the contract right now hurts Tyler Johnson, because he hasn't even seen that money yet, and people have already subscribed that label to him, and he talked about this, and he talked about that towards the end of the year. I wonder, David, do you think if he made, I don't know, what's Tyler Johnson realistically worth? $4 to $5 million a year?
Ooh.
Maybe six?
You could put it a little higher. Eight? Yeah. Maybe eight.
Okay, so let's say he's somewhere like $6-$8 million a year, right?
Yeah.
Is he looked at less of like as one of those like Evan Turner, Alan Crabb type of horrible, like Bismack Biyombo, terrible contracts?
Yes.
Or is he looked more like, do people think of him more like people think of right now of like a Fred VanVleet? You know what I mean?
No, because I don't know that you would necessarily think of him of having that kind of value. I still think you would appreciate him because of what he does do well. And again, the overall effort that is never questionable. So if he had signed a 4-year, $32 million deal, I think everybody would be quite okay with it. But, you know, the reality is that he's going to be making more than half of that just next year alone. So that is absolutely a problem. Now, the flip side of that issue as to what he provides is whether or not he matches that level of value is what could he provide in order to be seen as a much more valuable player? Like, not necessarily whether or not he's plateaued or not, but if he has to improve as a player, what could he possibly improve on to make him more valuable?
I mean, I'll answer your question with this question. I mean, do you think he needs to go back to the bench?
Yeah, I mean, that seems more likely, especially with Deion coming back. Like, I look at the year before, he averaged more minutes per game in 2016-17, and he had zero starts. You know, he was at just 1 minute per game. more, but at the same time, he had 40 starts, almost 30, you know, he had 39 starts last year alone. So if he comes off the bench, I think he could still be an impactful player. But ultimately, what I really expect for him to do as far as take another leap, I think he has to be a better three-point shooter. And maybe
I agree with you.
I think that's the next step for him because of his size. Like, as long as he got plenty of opportunities, he shot almost 5 attempts per game last year and less minutes per game. So I think he's going to have the same number of attempts available to him. He just has to be somewhere around 39 to 40 or over 40% in order for us to say, you know what? He's a dead-eye shooter. He still provides value out there regardless of his size, regardless of his contract, et cetera.
If he's not going to have the box score production, he needs to have that impact in a spacing environment, right?
Yeah, like Wayne Ellington.
Especially if Wayne Ellington isn't able to be re-signed, if Tyler Johnson can come in and replace that, it would be huge, especially at a younger contract than a guy that you already invested in. Like, you don't really necessarily want to – it's kind of like you're spending all that money on Tyler Johnson, and to bring Wayne Ellington back is almost having to double down on that position,
right.
Where Tyler really is best suited as a backup shooting guard. I agree with you. I think he needs to come off the bench. Let's look at maybe a 14 points per game, 39-40% three-point shooter on 4 to 5 attempts per game is what he needs to do, because at that point you're helping to space the floor, and you have a ton of value in that way. And then, of course, maybe you're able to win. Like, he's never going to be worth $19 million. Like, it's not happening, not in today's environment.
Right.
But he can start to at least have more value than he did, because last year he was essentially just a placehold starter, as you mentioned. He was playing less points per game as a starter less minutes per game as a starter than he was coming off the bench. The other option here is that he could trade Tyler Johnson. And that's a lot easier said than done. We'll talk about what that might even look like when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat. So that $19 million question is, what would it take for the Heat to get off of that deal? And David, I've seen a couple of the local B reporters talk about having to attach Justice Winslow or a young player like Bam Adebayo to Tyler Johnson's contract in order to come off of it. So, look, I given that the Heat don't have any draft picks necessarily that they could package in a deal, that's kind of where they're at. If they were desperate enough to get off of Tyler Johnson's deal, so would you attach a Winslow or a Bam to Tyler to get off of that contract?
No, I would not.
Yeah,
and perhaps not surprisingly to our listeners, I mean, I'm pretty much on board with the idea of bringing this team back, because I just don't think that there are realistic trade options there. We're not going to get a superstar in exchange for Tyler Johnson. We're not going to get a superstar in exchange for Hassan Whiteside. So knowing that the strength of this team is about still trying to find a way to make all these pieces work, if Tyler's capable of making that improvement off the bench to back up Deion as a solid and more improved shooter, I think there's still value there. I mean, what teams are capable of absorbing the $19 million of Tyler's contract? Maybe
that's a good point, because you're going to have to take another contract back. I mean,
correct, right? So there are not a lot of options out there. You're either going to take another bad contract that doesn't necessarily fit in better, and then you're also losing the value of either Adebayo or Winslow, which you don't want to, because they are the young core of this team moving forward. So, you know, you don't have a lot of draft picks. You're already foregoing adding youth in that way. You've already got youth on this team, at least in the hands of, in the form of Adebayo and Winslow. You don't want to sacrifice their growth and their development in order to get rid of Tyler's contract. So to me, I would keep him on the deal. Find a way to use him better. You're probably not going to be able to re-sign Ellington. So it's all about making sure that you get the most out of Tyler while he's on this roster.
The comparison that I think, you know, the beat reporters have in their mind is what the Lakers did. They had to move. They had to pair D'Angelo Russell in order to move Timofey Mozgov, right? And that bad deal. The difference with what the Lakers did is that they were gunning for max cap space for this summer.
Right.
Even if the Heat were to trade Tyler Johnson, they would have zero cap space. It's not like you could trade a guy making $19 million and get $19 million in cap space. Miami is already over the cap. If they were to trade Tyler Johnson, it would be for no purpose. And if you were to attach a Winslow or a Bam, I would go nuts if that happened, because for the only way that he could create cap space is that, number one, they'd have to trade maybe Hassan Whiteside, and then you move Tyler, and then you get max cap space. That's the way you do it, right?
Right.
And the only way you even go down that path is if you know you know, X player is coming to Miami and needs the maximum salary. That's the only way you do it. And if that's the case, then we'll talk. Like, if it turns out LeBron wants to come back to South Beach,
that's what
and
I
all
heard.
It takes is moving Whiteside, Tyler Johnson, and Bam Adebayo to do it, then I'll be more excited about that. But yeah, I don't think that there's any way that the Heat, outside of that possibility or something comparable, would move Tyler Johnson or would attach a Justice or a Bam to move Tyler Johnson, because the other point you made is exactly right. Like, this is a team that has no other means to add young talent, like high level young talent, right? You can go find your Tyler Johnsons on the scrap heap, but there's no way of finding another Justice Winslow, another Bam Adebayo with that kind of ceiling that they have. You got to keep those guys while you have them, and not just trade them just to get off of a contract for really no other purpose other than to just not pay Tyler Johnson $19 million, which you already committed to.
Yeah.
The other part of this is that they could attach a draft pick, but it would have to happen after this draft happens, and their pick this season has conveyed to Phoenix. They can trade. That opens up the door to trade a first-round pick in the future. So does Miami decide then, after the draft, to attach a future first-rounder to Tyler Johnson in order to come off that contract? Maybe, but again, I think it would have to happen in that same sort of sequence of events that you've got a deal in place to move Whiteside or Dragic or another big contract, and then you're moving that Tyler Johnson contract attached with a first-round pick. And you've got some sort of free agent in mind, because I also don't think that they would go to those sort of lengths just to avoid the luxury tax. I don't think that they care that much about it in order to just trade the future of the team to avoid it.
No, I have to agree with you on that one. So, I mean, look,
so,
it's,
yeah.
I think Tyler's just part of this team for the foreseeable future. So we just got to...
Well, let me ask you this last question before we sign off here. Would you trade Tyler Johnson for Carmelo Anthony if that was an option?
No, I would not. I mean, I think that's pretty... clear that I'm not interested in watching this team struggle through that. I think you and I have a different view on that. You know, I know that might seem like there's a bigger picture that might take a couple of years to walk to before it starts coming into focus. But I don't know that I necessarily want to see Carmelo putting up, you know, 30 shots per game, hitting a third of those, rather than seeing what Tyler does on a limited basis. Like, you know what, I know that Tyler's not a superstar, even though he's getting paid like one, but I can still appreciate his limited game because of that effort. Maybe I'm old-fashioned in that sense, but I'd rather watch that, know he's getting paid $19 million this year and the next, than watch Carmelo Anthony age ever more and putting up bad shot after bad shot, knowing that he's capable of taking another leap. Like, that's the caveat to that. I'm still not convinced that Carmelo Anthony's fully done, even though he certainly looks the part. What if he were to come to Miami, get under 10% body fat for the first time in his life, and
yep.
somehow wind up adding 5-6 years to his career as a super capable scorer that for the first time in many, many years, all of a sudden has more of a burst and explosion and can all of a sudden become the willing superstar that we were just talking about?
That's why I go back and forth on this, because of really just my own curiosity. Like, what happens when Carmelo gets on the no pancake program? I want to know. You know,
D-Wade,
like,
resigns to play with his friend, and all of a sudden we've got that go-to score. We've got Kobe Wade coming on. Oh my God, that would be, if nothing else, a really fun, aggressive, you know, punk you in right in the mouth kind of team. And I go back and forth
because I think of it. That is the logical. That's kind of the logical rabbit hole you go down, right?
Yeah.
As you start thinking about that. But that said, I should say there's no way that the Thunder trade Carmelo Anthony for Tyler Johnson. I don't care how upset they are with Carmelo Anthony. They're not trading him for Tyler Johnson, because the fans in Oklahoma City would just lose their crap. Like, they would just, I can't imagine that would go over well. You can't trade a superstar name for a guy, an overpaid white guy to come off your bench. Like, you just can't do it. They'd have to throw in like a Dion or something like that. But you know what? Tyler Johnson and James Johnson would make a lot of sense for that team, and then maybe then you start to have that conversation. But then that's a whole other thing that we don't.
Yeah, I don't see Sam Presti making that deal.
James Johnson is exactly what that team needs, though, at the four.
They already got P-Pat on there too, so Patrick Patterson.
But he's not good. they signed Pat twice to try to be that James Johnson type of guy, and he wasn't, like Jeremy Grant.
Right.
Moved over him in the rotation. That's what they were looking for. They didn't get it. with two Pat, and I think they could have it in James Johnson. That would be the deal that it would take, and then the Heat would get off of a lot of salary for the next, you know, Absolutely. 2 and 3 years down the road. But now we're going down a whole other thing, and this is a Tyler Johnson exit interview, so let's just end it there. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockdownheat@gmail.com and using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockdownheat. Music is courtesy Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.